cause ain't nothing but a G thing, baby. Too low down G, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays me. Unfadable, so please don't try to fade this. But back to the lecture at hand.
Back to the lecture or legend at hand. For those of you who have been listening or just been a part of the life of Deji, y'all know one thing about me. And that one thing is that I'm going to be myself in all spaces. Now, some of y'all have known that to be a funny, charismatic, outgoing guy. But there's also the flip side where there is a little bit of assholishness, a little bit of a jerk face. And honestly, just completely obtuse of my own choosing. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm a human being. I'm imperfectly perfect. But we go through our trials and tribulation. And in today's episode, I'm going to break down a scenario in my life, fairly recent, where I've been this person, been that person, but now mugs want to come at me. So for those of y'all who have, say, a favorite chore, or, you know, there's always something in your own house when you live with your people or when you live with others, you've always been designated to do regardless. I am one of those people where I have made a stance early on in my childhood that I would not wash dishes.
What?
Yes. As a youngin, I said I never got the point of washing dishes. I personally...
There's dirty dishes. That's the point.
That doesn't mean anything to me.
And you use them.
That does not mean anything to me.
So I'm very confused on this because...
That does not mean...
So at a young age, you decided that you weren't going to
because
wash dishes.
Because I did not see the validity.
And washing dirty dishes that you have dirtied?
Like I
that's said, the validity is there.
Like I said,
what the hell?
There are certain things as an individual you just say I'm not gonna do. It's not for me. It was never a sexist thing. It was never none of that.
It has to be.
It was
be,
always.
It has to be rooted in that.
No, it does not.
It's a lot of chores.
How?
You don't
because I do the laundry.
It's your clothes.
I used to do everybody's laundry. Remember?
No, I don't.
I
remember.
Literally used to be in the basement sorting through clothes with mom, doing laundry, folding laundry. Please. Continue. I used to clean the bathroom. I used to mop.
You used the bathroom.
So I used
you
to be.
The bathroom. You're I used to be. To clean it.
I used to be very domesticated in this house for shared spaces. Yeah, I mean, knows this.
But you don't want to wash the dishes that
but
you use.
For me, the one thing I could never,
the
I could never
is the
get,
most shared
I could
space.
Never wrap my head around.
The kitchen is the most shared space.
Is the washing of dishes.
And not only is it the most shared space, it's the most used space by everybody in the house. Everybody.
So,
yeah,
I mean, you're saying all this. You saying all this here. All this wahala.
Is it
I say that because, you know, it's Ramadan season.
Yeah.
And typically, people during Ramadan, they don't necessarily have the bandwidth mm-hmm. to deal with bullshit.
Yeah. Yours, especially.
Specifically.
Yours.
My mama.
Oh, no. Specifically your bullshit.
Specifically my mama.
Yeah.
As y'all heard, I haven't literally washed the dishes, like, consistently after I've used a plate. Arguably... Since I was 9 or 10.
Wow.
I always leave it there, and you know what? Magically it get washed. Yeah, I don't know
it's
if
not it's not magic. It's somebody else doing it for you.
It's magic. It's crazy when y'all just decide to lean in and see how far, you know, they give you an inch, you take a mile. Now,
none of that sounds like a responsible thing to do.
Now, I preface that like I said. It's Ramadan. My mama is fasting. Mm-hmm. And I know during these times, she's a little bit more testy.
Irritable.
Irritable. Her bandwidth is already not that high. Mm-hmm. So during a point where she can't eat while the sun is up, it's going to be through the roof.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and instead of being somebody who compromises or realizes all of the things that you're saying, instead of, you know, making their life a little bit easier, what do you do?
I don't do nothing. But live my life.
Okay.
So I say that because the other day my mom came home. Mm-hmm. I wasn't even out here. I was at the gym. Mm-hmm. Came back from the gym. Immediately, me and you are going to have problems. I said, Mom, I just got back. Why did you, what you yelled at me for?
Well, first of all, let me tell you what happened, because you weren't home. I was home. I was in my room getting ready to go out. And my mom, the first thing she does when she comes in the house is she starts calling my dad. She's like, Kunle, come look at this. Come look at this. Kunle. Like he's supposed to do something. That nigga know he can't say shit to us because we got some. We waiting for you to say one thing to us because we got words for you. You can open your mouth and say anything. I bet you I'll shut you down and make you look stupid, crazy. So she calling him. I'm like, what that nigga gonna do? Then she start calling me from upstairs. Mind you, I'm in my room getting ready, so I didn't have no shirt on, and I can't walk around the house naked or with no shirt on. I can do no pants, but I can't do no shirt. So I was just like in my room getting ready. She's yelling my name, and I already know what she's upset about because I came downstairs earlier. After Deji left, before my parents came home, and I saw that there was dishes in the sink, and I knew it was going to be a problem. But one thing about me, I'm not clean up after no grown-ass man. I'm not clean up after Deji. I'm not clean up after my father. I'm not doing that. I'm not clean up after no grown-ass man, especially when they are fully capable of cleaning up themselves. So I just looked at the dishes, and I went to my room. I already knew it was going to be some shit. She started yelling my name. Then she come into my room talking about some, you didn't hear me calling you. I responded, yes, I'm not going to run downstairs so you can ask me who left these dishes in the sink when you know who left the dishes in the sink. It's no, you know, confusion, quorums, or whatever the fuck the people say. You know that Deji cooked and left the dishes in the sink. Because anytime I cook, I wash the dishes after myself. Because I just, you know, that's what you do. That's just what responsible people do. People with reason, that's what they do. Because when you use dishes, you should wash them. But this is his story to tell. So I'm just letting him, you know, I'm just interjecting with what happened before Deji came home so he can continue with where he left off. So yeah, she's like, I'm like, girl, you're doing all this yelling about there being dishes in the sink, asking who left the dishes when you knew it was Deji. Then she walked away. Because I'm like, yeah, you need to save that. She's like, I told you not to tell me that I'm yelling. I'm like, no, girl, if you're yelling, I'm going to tell you you're yelling. It's not disrespectful. It's just reason. Because you're yelling about something we all know that was Deji's fault.
100%. So right. I walk in the door. You know, I had a really hard workout. I'm tired. It's been a long week. Yeah. Exhausted.
From working out, not from not eating because you're doing your religious purposes.
For a work week.
Okay. I'm just saying.
So I come in. My mom said, me and you are going to have problems. Yelling at the top. I said, hold on, Mom. I just walked through the door. Calm all that yelling.
Hello, how are you? How's your day?
I said, hi, how you doing? Whatever. And I said, why are you yelling? I just got in the house. She said, you're not going to like me. Me and you, we going to fight. I said, calm down. Ain't nobody trying to fight you.
I think that's the great equalizer. Like, now that we're older and we're still at our parents' houses, I think the great equalizer is that we know they're not about to, like, they're not about, I mean, they might try to put their hands on us now, but they're really too old for that. And honestly, so are we.
Yeah.
Because one time my dad tried to threaten me and say that he was going to slap me. And I said, I wish you would. I'll slap the shit out you back. I just want to, just give me a reason. We could be in this bitch boxing for real.
I wasn't all
He wasn't serious though. It didn't even sound confident coming out of his mouth. But like, if he was, I was too.
So then that happened. And
we could get to rumbling.
So that happened. And we was going, and she's like, me, you, they're going to have to call the police. I'll call the police on you. I said, here, call 911. That's what I said.
She's very dramatic.
I said, call 911, because you're going to call the police on your son. She said, she said,
you're not supposed to be living here.
Yeah, and then you said, you don't want to live here. Blah, blah. I said, Mom, what would you do if I wasn't here? So my problem is I be knowing I do stuff wrong. And instead of just doing the right thing,
you try to make it somebody. I just try to gaslight people.
I don't gaslight. I ease over because I'd be like, you know, we still good. I said we still alive. You know, I love you too. You know, I do that. You know what I'm saying? And then my mom don't like that because she would be like,
she wants him to be upset by the things that she's saying. She knows that's her. Like, she doesn't have too many ways to attack. Because she can't physically beat him up.
Yeah.
But with her words, she can strike. And if someone is literally laughing at you or they're just making a joke out of the situation.
Correct. And that was my problem.
Yeah.
But like I said.
Your problem is that you left the dishes in the sink.
And
now you're trying to reason that when you were a kid, you just decided at the young age that you were never just going to wash dishes again.
Because did I wash the dishes when I was a young child?
No.
Exactly. So nothing has changed. If it started in adolescence, And it continues.
That doesn't make it right. Like,
and I even tell
this people, nigga will just by this justification, this nigga will say when he was young, he was killing rodents, and now he a serial killer. It's okay because they allowed him to do it when he was younger. That's your justification. No. It's the same situation, it's just different circumstances.
So why have I tell y'all this story? Because today's episode is about being unapologetically yourself. Right?
Okay.
We had a scenario in the last recent, or actually in the last week, national championship game with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, and we could even go before then if we want to talk about LSU, right? Both women, one white, one black, one other culture, one non-other culture, were both being unapologetically themselves, right?
Yeah.
And that's the crazy thing that people don't understand because they don't understand the women's game. For somebody who's been watching women's basketball damn near since I've been 17, 16, because my sister played the sport, y'all just didn't understand that women could be like this, right? Yeah. They could have this competitive edge. Mm-hmm. They could have this bravado, this zeal, just like the men do. It just looks different because of how it's packaged, right? Caitlin Clark, she was running up the numbers, going crazy in the NC tournament, talking all the stuff. Y'all was saying Kobe mentality, but she still was being unapologetically.
Mamba.
Unapologetically herself.
Who was Cobra?
Cobra? Mamba. You're right.
I said Mamba.
And then Angel Reese, she just giving you, honestly, I don't know what the hood they talking about. I don't know if Angel Reese is really giving me ghetto, hood, or whatever they've been saying. To me, she just seemed like a normal black girl who is in her bag from a basketball standpoint, and she understands her blackness, and she's reveling in that, and she actually is very proud to be black, and she shows it every single time. She is doing everything. Even her poses are feminine. You know what I'm saying? She understands that balance between being an athlete and being a woman, right? As anybody should. And my problem is that other people are trying to dictate to these women how they need to act. And I'm telling y'all right now, you tell somebody.
Well, they're only telling one person how they should react.
Well, I guess you're right.
The whole buzz or the whole controversy with the situation is that Angel Reese was taunting, and I say that with quotation marks, Caitlin Clark at the end of the game, even though they lost. So, or because they lost, she was taunting them. If the roles were reversed, it wouldn't have been none of this dialogue, none of this discourse. But because Angel Reese and her team full of black women won and beat a team full of white girls with a couple of sprinkles of black women and ambiguity, the conversation is different. I'm really here to talk about being unapologetic yourself. You know, one thing that we need to realize is that this younger generation of people, because Angel Reese is a sophomore, so she may be 2019, you know, maybe 21, fresh 21. Like, these is kids. And they not from the same generation of us where we, you know, we have to be respectability politics and all this stuff. They gonna say whatever the fuck they want, and you know, you're not gonna, the consequences is not the same for them, you know, because this is their world.
Yeah, I was about to say,
you know, before us, like, I wish I could, you know, that's why I said y'all just lucky that I wasn't really good at basketball, because if I was really good at basketball, I would have been just like that. And I was very unapologetic when I was young. To the point to where, like, the white people, because it was white people, the white people around me
worked
so hard to make me not be the way that I was. Like, they physically, 100%. You could physically see them, like seizing and having, like, you know, like, the dissonance of just trying to control me, but I'm just, like, a 17-year-old.
Which is not even
that's what it was. I was definitely unapologetic.
At younger, because we could go back to when you were in fifth grade.
Oh, yeah. I mean, since I was coming into my own, and since I started being able to, like, pick up on, like, life and social conversations and social cues, I've always just been unapologetically myself, and people have had a problem with it. And the difference between me and Angel Reese is that she can do her big one, because we realize that, like, respectability politics only affects us.
Correct.
Because either way, if you fit into this box of what the white people want, they're still going to tell you you're not good enough because you're black.
Right.
So you might as well get outside that fucking box, do what you want to do, be who you are, and just live your life.
Be who you are.
For your life.
Yeah. So, I mean, I agree with you, right? And not to focus...
That's why I love Chicago shit. Like, even though we're from the suburbs,
100,
and that's not like our, it's our experience. Like, nobody will ever tell me like we're not from Chicago. Like, regardless of like what, you know, where the lines are and how people, you know, define Chicago and suburbs and whatever the fuck.
Yeah.
I'm completely okay with saying that I'm from Streamwood, wow. But I'm also completely okay with being like, I'm from Chicago and I love Chicago shit. Like, yeah. When I go to certain places and I go to certain events and I know it's going to be a good ass Chicago time, I'm okay with that. Like, yeah. I love Chicago girls. So like, I love everything about, you know,
what it is to be Chicago,
be from Chicago, yeah. Whether it's South Side, West Side, you know, I don't really pick a side. If you from up north, you know, that's where we from.
100%.
And if you from over east, you know, that's your own Chicago too. I love I got my Miska Moska too. Because if Lotto can go to East Shore and film a music video,
that was in East Shore.
Yes. It was in South Shore. East Side Chicago is South Shore.
Got you.
Like, oh, right,
yeah,
by,
yeah,
Indiana.
Yeah. I know where that was.
If Lotto can go there and feel comfortable, I got quotation marks, then, you know, anybody can, during the day.
I just
and that's a white woman. So y'all literally let this white woman just walk through.
Lotto is white?
She is.
Lotto is mixed.
That's a white woman.
Okay. Well. Shorty is definitely mixed. What you mean?
So Angel Reese, you know, I feel like Deji is, like he said, he is just very unapologetic in the way that he refuses to wash dishes that he used and is leaving the responsibility of washing the dishes to somebody else, just because he, and as much as a progressive person that he likes to be, he's a fully leaning into misogyny because he knows that a woman is not going to leave dishes. So
you're a liar. You're a liar. You're a liar.
Then give the actual reason to why you don't wash the dishes.
I told you. I just
that sound like a bullshit reason to just, ow, it might be unbeknownst to you. Unbeknownst to you, you like the misogynoir.
Wait, unbeknownst?
Yes.
Unbeknownst.
I didn't say that. I pronounce words correctly. You're the one who you,
unbeknownst to me?
Unbeknownst to you.
Okay, there we go.
Unbeknownst to you.
Okay.
You might have that internalized misogynoir in you. It's okay. You literally benefit off the fact that you're a male, whether you identify with it or not. So
lies.
The fact, because if I left them dishes in the sink, mom would fully come upstairs and beat my ass. Or I wouldn't even do that because I know how to wash my dishes. But I'm just saying the conversation would have been different. The fact that she just, you know, called you out your name and, you know, washed the dishes.
That's regular.
Is just regular. But the fact that, like, I would not even think of that. Or like the fact that like somebody could say, you're a girl, you should be doing this. But that's not the conversation that you got. You literally just got told all of the things that you got told and somebody else washed the dishes.
100%.
So it's like I said, underlying something that you can't control, something that you're unaware of, but you fully benefit off the fact that you're a man.
That's not the reason why.
I know that's not the reason why you think, but I'm just letting you know the opposite.
Oh, yeah,
situation.
I could get that. The unconscious, yeah, bias.
There's no bias in the situation, but the unconscious, yeah, just reality of the situation.
Learned behavior.
Yeah,
that's what I say. I mean, yes, but I think even in general, right, the dishes is a small thing because that's actionable, but like the personality traits that I've been granted and I've just learned to like lean into because that's who I am is kind of like the crux of the conversation we're having, right?
Yeah.
Like if I look at my whole entire life, I'm still the same person in my values that I am, that I was when I was a younger kid. It's just a little bit more refined and I have situational awareness, right? So for me, like you said, similar to you, my problem was that I've always been a pretty outspoken, and if you tell me to shut up, I'm going to just keep talking black boy into black man, right? It doesn't really matter what era of my life. If a teacher has told me to stop talking because you're trying to teach something in the class and I already got it and I feel like you could speed up the class, I've done that. And it's funny how, like, at first, the biggest obstacles in your life are usually the people who don't think that you will amount to much. And that's what I've realized, right? When I was a young black boy and all these teachers were over here separating me from all my friends, I would have my own individual desk right by the teacher or away from them, or I'd be closer to the teacher. And at the end of the day, it was just for them to police me, right? Which we've talked about before on this episode, on this podcast, about how teachers kind of will police you because they're trying to force you to be something you're not. Mm-hmm. And all those same teachers who didn't know that you would amount to much, guess where the fuck they at, and guess where the fuck we at?
Still there.
Right.
You know, we always have this conversation, though. We literally, like, it's so unfortunate, because we've spoken about, I think that, like, the educational system, as flawed as it is, literally has the potential to, like, bring, it's where you spend the most of your days. Right. As a kid, like, you literally spend the most of your days for most of the years in this schooling system. So they have the potential to really shift your life in one way or another. And I feel like it is on teachers to really take that responsibility to do that. I mean, regardless of the resources, like, you know, we're literally seeing it with Abbott Elementary. They're giving us a take, if you will, on, like, the schooling system from, like, how they don't have the resources and stuff like that. But, like, we actually see that there are teachers who are doing their best to make a difference. I mean, at the elementary school level, and I can't really speak to my elementary school teachers because that was so long ago. But, like, when I think about the bulk of, like, or the transformative period in my education, it was high school. Sure. And I think about those interactions that I had with those teachers. Them teachers didn't do what they needed to do.
But that's because it's
so we always talk. We literally always talk about them. But I think it's so important because
you have to.
Teachers have so much power that they don't. They may not feel like they have because they're so limited in their resources. But I think, like, your attitude is the biggest. It could go so far, especially in high school.
As somebody who is actively
I love a good teacher, though.
Yeah, as somebody,
a good teacher, I love a good teacher.
100%. As somebody who is actively, like, a participant in the community and trying to give back to younger generations, mm-hmm. I think the one thing that I've taken away from my interactions when I was that age is that nobody encouraged me and allowed me to be myself. And that comes from a point of, one, internal confidence and, like, security in your insecurities, right? Because what you see is, like, a lot of teachers will project their, a lot of people who are in an authoritative figure will project their insecurities on how a person should behave onto said child. Or, yeah, because that's what it is. We're children all the way up until high school. Until we get, honestly, up until college.
18.
I mean, but even in college, you're still a kid. Yeah. So that's my thing. What I've realized is that, like, if I look back, a lot of people was trying to tell me how to act, but nobody was trying to teach me how to be me, right? Which is an individual journey, yes. But then I look at somebody like my older brother or our older brother, Tunde, and his thing was never like, I'm not going to change who you are. I'm just going to see, I'm going to learn you. I'm going to figure you out. And then I'm going to best point out how you should shape your life based on what God has given you as your skill set and your gifts. So somebody who took the approach of, like, okay, there's nothing wrong with this person. There's nothing wrong with this individual. How do I continue to sow into this person? How do I continue to invest? How do I continue to allow this person to flourish as they are? Don't get me wrong. You learn lessons along the way, but your personality and your quirkiness is what makes you you. And what I'm saying is not the journeys and trials and tribulation, but anybody, and I say this, anybody who has ever tried to tell me how to be me, I shut that down real fucking quick. Because what you're not going to do is tell me how to be me. I don't care if you have my best interests at heart. I don't even care if you feel like there's something wrong for me from a character standpoint. The only person who could check me is God. Mm. And probably Tunde. and
me.
Probably you.
Yeah.
Those are the people. Besides that, anybody who's ever tried to tell me about myself, I'm like, you wasn't with me shooting in the gym. Mm-hmm. So me being unapologetic is me knowing that, hey, I've put the work in. I've really analyzed myself as a human being. Mm-hmm. And I can speak boldly and I can speak confidently because I know who I am. I know my intentionality.
That's the good thing. Like, you did the work for sure.
Correct.
You went to the therapy. You did the self-healing. You did the inner
I also did the apologizing. I went on a world tour of apologies. Mm. That's what people really don't know because I'd be talking like I'm high and mighty. But I was obviously like, no, I'm sorry for the way I talked to you during the season of my life. I'm sorry for what I did.
You apologized to Tunde?
Of course I did.
Yeah? What did you do to him?
No, I didn't apologize. Oh, I didn't apologize to Tunde. Mm-hmm. I didn't do anything.
I was going to say you didn't do nothing to him.
But I did have to apologize to a number of folks because of how I treated the situation. But that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, making amends. Yeah. But I also am not big up on that. So, yeah. Like,
people are going to forgive you or they're not.
Exactly. And my thing is that, like, now that I'm at the stage, the beauty of being unapologetically yourself is the way you get to love on yourself so unintentionally, mm-hmm. right? The boundaries that, like, I have with people but also myself and learning who I am every day and my tendencies even faster is really accelerated a lot of my season of growth, right? Or as Yemi would say, I've been in my bag lately. I don't even feel like I'm really, really in that bitch. I feel like the hand is just at the cusp. I'm still holding the handle. Mm. I'm not really in the bag mm-hmm. yet. But, you know, that will come.
Mm-hmm.
But now I'm going to ask you, Yemi, right? Because you talked about your experiences being a black girl in the schooling system.
No, that's what we always end up getting on that. It just has so much of an influence on your life. We really start to realize. Because you spend so much time there. You're literally, until you graduate from whether it's high school or college, if you go get your, you are literally a student for the majority of your life.
100%.
Until you're not. And we're always learning. You're always a student. If you're not a student in school, you're the student of the game.
Right.
You're never not learning. I love learning. I just don't love like the schooling system, the education
system.
Yeah,
because it's just kind of, it's kind of getting ridiculous with how much it costs. But you know,
and they're shooting babies in the schools. So what's the question?
So the question for me is that like, besides schooling, right? Like what I've noticed for you is that your extracurricular activities kind of helped you to kind of shape who you are, but also like accept who you are, right? Like that's not what I'm trying to say. They allowed you to be unapologetically yourself, right? Like I think when you joined Delta, a lot of your qualities came out, right? Like you being a natural born leader, being very organized, routine, the sisterhood, the things that you wanted to be, mm-hmm. I felt like you literally got positioned and that came out of you.
Yeah.
So like, how did that feel? Like, what did that look like for you? What was that journey like?
I mean, at the time, like when I like joined, when I became a duly initiated member into Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, like you never realize how much of an impact it's going to have on you, especially since I didn't have any prior knowledge of the sisterhood before I got to college. And even like going through the process and just like learning all of the things, like I think like it really just taught me that like you just have to be on your shit as a black woman. Like you literally just have to be on your shit. Anything you do, like there's really no excuse that you can make because the work has to get done at the end of the day. Like I literally, by the time I got to my senior year, was fully running the chapter by myself, and you know, putting on programs, like doing the business, doing school, and then bringing in a line of 8 initiates, my NEOs, all by myself. Of course, I had the support of my alumni chapter, but when it came down to Delta chapter and anything that needed to be done for Delta chapter at the University of Iowa that year, 2018, when I was a graduating senior, not knowing what the fuck I was going to do for the rest of my life, because I was leaving this part of my, this chapter was ending for me as it was beginning for other people. Mm-hmm. Every part of that process was me. Mm-hmm. I signed my name on 8 applications, you know, everything. Ooh, sorry. So all of that, like, and that's, and really what that taught me is that like anything that I want to do, I have the full capacity to do. Like 100%. Even now, people, how do you balance doing this and this and this? Because I've done it under a pressure cooker, which is literally 100%. Just like you have this. These are the deadlines you need to make, and you have, you know, people have done this with all of the support that they need. So one thing I realized is, yeah, definitely use your resources and you know, fall on your people when you can, but also realize that like nobody is gonna do the work if you don't do it. It's just not gonna get done. It needs to get done because other people depend on you. Like there were literally girls who wanted to share this same experience that I cherish so much. And that I was cherishing when I was there. They want to share this experience with me and also with the masses of Delta Sigma Theta. So it's really on you to ensure that they have that experience. But yeah, so it just spawned from that. Also, it's just really fun. I realized that like being in situations like that are where I thrive the best. Like I like being busy. I like having something to do, not because I'm avoiding, you know, downtime and boredom, because I definitely sit in that all the time as well. Mm-hmm. But I just would prefer to be like hands on, you know, like in the situation. And then that's how, you know, like the music stuff, like the DJing stuff, and like becoming like this socialite, or you know, what we're working towards, all the things that we're doing right now, is all just because this is the shit that we like to do.
100%.
So, and all of it, and really working towards being your own boss.
100%.
So no one can tell you that you have to act a certain type of way. Mm-hmm. is really that. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I really wish that I was better at basketball, because if I was, or that I took it more serious, because if I was just like Angel Reese, y'all wouldn't be able to tell me shit. Because one thing about it, I'm talking all this shit and I'm being, you know,
you'd be able to articulate.
I'm backing it up because I'm doing the work. Like, my team literally won the national championship. So regardless of what you have to say about my attitude and the way that I run, the way that I run things over here, I'm putting action behind it. So that's really all it is. So yeah, I've just like turned the like negative connotation of being unapologetically me into like a positive and just like using it for my benefit.
But it was never a negative.
It was never a negative to me. It was just like, that is how the people around me made it seem. Correct. I turned it into a positive, and I've just, now I'm being very loud about what I do. If it's like, if it's the professional part of me, yes, I am a mid senior level professional working in tech. 100%. I manage, I make money. Monday through Sunday, I'm DJing and I'm being loud. I'm making my presence known, whether it's by speaking on the mic, whether it's playing this dope ass music that people want to listen to, and I'm just like enjoying being a part of the scene. I'm gonna do that too. So anywhere that you in, you excel. But I just want to know what any of that has to do with you not washing dishes that you use.
Yeah, I mean, that's you going back. Why are you circling back?
This is the theme of the episode. The theme of the episode is being unapologetic. But I'm talking about being unapologetic in a positive way. You were talking about being unapologetic in a negative way.
That's just an example. There's plenty of times where I've been unapologetic
in a positive way. Of course. No one's saying that you're not.
You want to bring up the one bad thing. We all can't be perfect. What I say?
Because we have these conversations.
I'm imperfectly perfect.
Yes, yes. You are a ghetto intellectual.
Yeah, 100%.
But every week, you do the same thing and expect... excuse me, a different outcome. Not even expect a different outcome.
I don't expect a different outcome.
The outcome is always the same. And I feel like if we know...
I'm just waiting for Bob to be like, you know what? This is just my son. If this is the one thing that...
She's never going to do that.
If this is the one thing that he does that I don't like, cool, so be it. That's all it is.
She's never
Mom has a lot of things. You have a lot of things that I have to learn to accept because I love you. Mm-hmm. You. That's the thing. It's not love if you can't accept me for me. That's the thing.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that. They don't love me for me, people on the podcast. Okay?
This nigga acting like he just has a natural BO, or like he walks slow. Like, these are things, these are things that we can accept you for, things that we can't change.
Yes.
You know, you snore when you sleep. You know, things that you can't change, even though that can be changed. You don't wash the dishes because you feel like you don't have to. That's something you can just
So First of all, what Yemi is not going to tell you is that in this house, our father has never washed the dishes.
Never washed the plate.
So if that's my learned behavior,
if our mom is away,
he'll leave the motherfucking dishes in the sink.
He will cook and fully leave the dishes in the sink.
I expect it. That's what I said.
That's why I was like, why are you calling this man? Like, what the fuck he going to do? Honestly, if anything, if you're feeling exhausted and you're feeling tired because you're fasting and, you know, it's taking a lot out of you, that nigga is doing the same thing too. But he could also get up in the morning, because she wakes up a little bit earlier than he gets up, to come downstairs and cook and cook for them.
Air.
I'm like, he can be doing that shit. Like, that nigga don't ever be... pick up a spoon. He don't pick up a knife.
I'm like, you must got it good, because I don't even know if you deserve it. But...
and that's the real tea.
You know,
and that's why I said, if anybody got something to say to me, they can say it to me, because I got words for them.
Of course. So it's interesting. And I love the fact that, like, you leaning in to who you are unapologetically has kind of amplified everything that you want it to be, which I think is a super, 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 super important point. Right. Like, a lot of times people think that being unapologetically themselves, and I'm going to say that, means you get the right to act rude, ghetto. And this is just me being honest, but it basically is all the shitty characteristics of a human being. That's what you think it means, right? Unapologetically living out who you are and your truth, for me, means that you gain an alignment, and in that alignment,
you do the things.
You find out who you be, and you end up becoming. This is my whole thing. Remember, I said what my TED Talk is, right? My TED Talk, if I ever get the chance to be on it, would be, what would it look like if I never experienced trauma? And who is that individual and who is that person, right?
It's funny when you start leaning in to who you are unapologetically, how all the things you always envision for yourself start to happen.
Yeah.
Ooh, that glow. Ooh, the personality. Ooh, the networking. Ooh, the success in your career. All these things happen because you said, you know what? I'm tired of people dictating who I need to be.
Right.
I dictate who I need to be. And I'm a
dictator. I will say you get further along, like letting go of like what, you know, how you feel, like how society feels like you should act in a situation. I feel like me, one thing that I know a lot of people do is like, they'll like never go up to someone and just like have a conversation with them. Right. And even sometimes when you do it, I'd be like, oh my goodness. But like sometimes like you'll walk up and have a conversation with someone and that could literally be, or just like talking to the next person that you feel like you shouldn't be talking to or whatever. That can literally be the connection that you need. So that's one thing I've been seeing a lot of. Like I'll talk to certain people who like, I talk to anybody really, and you never know what kind of connection that's going to get you. But yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to say about
that? We didn't even talk about unapologetic. So now I have a beautiful story, right? So like Yemi said, middle management, senior level, right? We're both kind of in the same space in our career right now, which is a beautiful thing to see, right?
I'm a little ahead of you though.
That's fine. You've had the bank of knowledge and experience to help you along the way. So
amen.
So for that, you should honestly.
But I'm just talking shit because you literally left me at the TSA, and you upgraded your seat, and
you would have done the same exact thing.
Well, we don't know because I'm not in the situation.
And you never will, because guess what? Your upgrade gonna happen.
Amen.
And you're gonna be in the same position that I am.
Amen. And hopefully my Soho house come through.
Amen. At a good church, say amen.
Amen.
So I'm saying these things because I'm realizing, right, like the early part of my career, I will tell y'all, it was the biggest struggle of my life because I felt like being me was enough, if that makes sense. Not from a work standpoint, but I felt like off the strength of who I am as a person, people would connect and vibe with me.
No.
And that was a tough lesson I had to learn in corporate America. No. I wasn't in corporate America to make any friends, or I wasn't doing any of that.
Yeah.
But what I realized is that like these niggas don't give a fuck about you. So why should you give a fuck about these niggas?
Yeah, they literally don't care about you.
Right. And that was the realization. But then life hit me in my second job. I would just at the end of the beginning part of my career is treacherous. And I'm still at the beginning, you know what I'm saying? Because careers typically last 30 to 40 years. But I'll be damned if I stay that long.
God forbid I'm still working and I'm 60. I'm going to be so sick. I'm still working in corporate America and I'm 60. I'm going to be sick.
So what I will say now is that unapologetically being myself at this new phase in my life has really exponentially grown when it's come to corporate America. And that's the point I actually wanted to get to, because Yemi talked about it from a personal aspect. And I love the testimony because we need that. But we need practical application, right, on this podcast. You come to us for the laughs, you come with us for the funny, but we also give you all a lot of practical sense, right? So we both being in corporate America, you heard at the level of the level we are in our careers, right? And it's not like we're doing anything big, and we could still, but it's doing something, right? I'm in corporate America. I'm a young professional, or I'm in the middle of my career. I'm trying to elevate. What does it look like from a day-to-day perspective to be unapologetically black in these spaces when majority of the company is white? And if they're on a diversity and inclusive initiative, the majority of my counterparts are white women, right? Because that's really what it means. That's what it really means.
Yep.
D&I don't mean we're going to hire more black people. Mm-hmm. It means we're going to hire more white women.
Mm-hmm.
Or
diversity in general. Whenever they really say that, they really just mean white people, white women.
More coded language. That's more corporate game. You know what I'm saying? What does that look like, Yemi? Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm trying to get that, because what I've noticed in my career and my experience now is that like at this tech company, right, what I've learned is how to be professional but make it sound creatively like myself, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not that boring ass, like, well, this is the statement, blah, blah, blah. I'll be like, okay, so this is what the finance is looking like this month, right? In this month's finance, I'll break it out like blah, 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 blah. And even how I...
That's one thing I struggle with, too, is, like, I can talk... Like, you know, we talk all the time on this podcast, and we make... And we make, you know, big ideas sound regular. Mm-hmm. But like when I get into my workspace and I'm trying to like have conversations about how things work, it's very hard for me to communicate that without like speaking about it the way that I would just have a regular conversation. Wow. Like I could just, you know, like try to explain something to somebody and not using like Black vernacular or just speaking 100. Like it's regular conversation, because one, they're not going to get it. Two, it's going to sound awkward in mm-hmm. this space. And three, you want to keep a level of professionalism. 100%. But if I'm just having a conversation with you, I could like fully break down a concept, a statistical concept to you in regular language. But like having to be able to switch that is just very hard to do, especially since I don't work in a traditional corporate setting. Like I work in my house. Yeah. So I can come downstairs and have a conversation with you about some other shit. Mm-hmm. And then I got to go back upstairs and like, you That's know, code switch is yeah. very, it's very hard to navigate.
And remote work is definitely hard, because sometimes I do get caught up using, I'm like,
yeah. Yeah. It's giving. You probably say that all the time on the calls. Cause you
I definitely, speak. I say 100. Yeah. I say that all the time. Yeah. And I'm like, and now I've changed it from 100 to 100%.
Yes.
So it's more of a affirmative. so like it's simple things like that. But also I have made, like, I know this has been like a really big topic, right? Like before I didn't really understand like the definition of presenting myself as like a Black man in America, right? Because what they used to say is like the hair, blah, blah, blah. Me, I work from home. I'm on every call. I got my hoodie. I got my hoodie on. I got the hood going back. If I got a hat, I'm wearing it like a Black man would, right? So I'm not really hiding that no more. If I got braids in, fresh braids, when they ask me how I get a haircut, I'd be like, no, I got my stuff rebraided today. If they see my, you know, and I do, I've got.
Well, they never ask. I will fully like.
But you're a woman. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm a Black man.
They never ask Black women.
I'm a Black man in finance with braids. Like that's.
I'm a Black woman in analytics.
No. But that's not what I'm saying. That
it's just
typical finance is very clean cut. You know what I'm saying? Like you have
typical. This is the new generation. Buzzer. That's all we're saying.
Exactly. So me doing that, I was in a meeting yesterday, and there was another Black dude. He had on a pink durag. I said, I love to see it. I love to see it.
My nigga.
I said, don't let me get on, because I will wear the durag and I have my shit tied to the side just to be like, hey.
I guess so. As long as it's not like an important meeting, if it's just like a regular.
Yeah, it was a weekly sync, but it's just funny because like you're
the generation
starting to see
is changing. Yeah,
you starting to, but he's older than I am, and that's what I'm saying.
You have to say like it is a little bit, but like don't try to press anything too hard.
Yeah,
you know, like stay within your boundaries. Like do your big one. Like I fully will have a conversation about what I did on the weekend with my manager, and he loves to hear it because he understands that like people have a life outside of.
But that was one of the things I did too.
Yeah, like I will fully just talk about like what like. In detail, oh yeah, I DJed this, I did this, I did this, you know.
Yeah, you should have fun. Because as an employer, and I say that in corporate America, you don't want your employee to only rely and focus on you, because otherwise that just leads for a very dismal life.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was talking to Tunde about this. I said it's crazy how when I started pursuing like other things,
work
outside of my corporate job, how my work performance got better, right? Yeah. How my ability to focus got better, because it's like, I got to get this work done because I want to hop to what I want
to
work on.
I got other shit to do. Yeah, I got literally. Other shit to do.
So,
I want to keep this job so I can fund the other shit that I want to do.
Exactly.
Like, that's the biggest thing. Yeah. I'm like, you want me to do this? Okay.
100%. But then you start seeing that in your performance reviews, the amount of work you get, even the nimity that they give you. And that's what really did it for me. If you give me autonomy, I use the wrong word. Autonomy is the mm-hmm. word. If you give me enough autonomy, I'll go crazy because I already know how to make the right decisions. I just need to know that you're not going to be on my back, because mm-hmm. at that point, it's you doing the job. It's not me doing the job.
Mm-hmm.
So I say all those things because I think while you're in corporate America, one of the biggest things I learned is that like we used to be so cut, like so guarded as Black people, and we still have to be to a degree, right?
Mm-hmm.
But certain things... Hey, I'm going to tell you that I got a shoe hustle on the side and I make bread doing that. Because you know what? I might get your business on God. You know what I'm saying? I just don't want to make money. But that's just the aspect of like in the generation. We in the generation of hustlers. But I got to be unapologetic myself.
We are the generation. I feel like our generation is the generation of hustlers. And the generation after us is definitely the unapologetic. Like, what do you mean? I can't do this. I'm going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. Like just being very, not obtuse, because obtuse is like kind of negative connotation to it. But just like being like very in your shit. Like, I'm focused on me and making sure that I'm living the life that I want to live. Because the generations before were focused on everybody else. Correct. So, yeah, I believe that. I think that ties in very well. You know, like, Angel Reese literally just put on a show of like, no, I'm going to do what I want to do.
I'm going to be black.
I'm going to just make it make sense. Like, yeah. why would we want to go, like, the losers aren't supposed to go to see the president, regardless of how you feel about, you know, this being a win for black, for white, for women's sports in general. We all are aware that it is a win for women's sports in general. But if you lost the game, you don't need to
loser.
Be.
Loser.
Yeah.
Loser.
That's all it is.
That is. We got the dub. You're supposed to celebrate. You're supposed to rub it in their face.
Not to that extreme. I mean, just not like that in general.
I'm trying to tell you, I'm so tired because I play
sports.
That's what
I'm saying. I'm glad I'm not good at sports. Because if I was dunking on holes and you know, scoring 30, 40 points a game, they would have to tell
I'm
the town.
I'm so tired of it.
It would be everybody against me.
What the, like, I'm trying to understand where this idea of sportsmanship.
And I would sell shirts, Suki against everybody.
I'm so confused where this idea of sportsmanship came from. Because it doesn't make sense to me, right? Sportsmanship, when y'all been going at it for 60, 70 minutes, and especially when it comes to sports like football, hockey, mm-hmm. Like you literally trying to hurt me, and now you're telling me I gotta have sportsmanship? Like, no.
Right. That's like, especially a sport like that where the goal is to knock this nigga down.
Right. And I'm like, y'all are arbitrarily picking what is decorum and not. And this is not it.
It's not
this sports. These are gladiator sports. If you wanted to do them, you would do them. Mm-hmm. Now, we got to wrap it up because that was a lovely segment.
And no, it was, honestly.
I wanted y'all to hear that because there's value in being unapologetically yourself. And the value is that you understand that you are the only person that you need in order to be successful. You are the catalyst to your success.
And anybody who's willing to help you on the success journey, you don't got to do it alone, because that's what I mentioned before too. Like, I had a team. Anywhere you feel like you see me succeeding, and I'm still getting there. I haven't reached the pinnacle of my success yet. But anywhere you feel like you see me succeeding, I've had people to help me along the journey. Of course, I did the bulk of the work, but I'll never say that I didn't have like the support of my alumni chapter, my advisors when I was in college, you know, doing Delta stuff, like my brothers as it pertains to like professional stuff, my DJ mentors, my friends, all of the people that have supported me, 100%. who come to my events, my friends that make flyers for me, like anybody, it's a team. It all takes the effort of the team. Any part of my life where you see that I'm succeeding or I've had successful moments, it's all been because of me, but in addition to the people 100%. That I have.
You go farther when you have a team.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
And the one thing I'll say about the Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese situation is that when LSU won, I love the support platonically of all black men just celebrating the excellence that was black women. It's high time that is the norm.
All I have to say is this. I went to school at the University of Iowa. I didn't give a fuck about them girls at Iowa. I didn't give a fuck. I wanted them to lose to South Carolina. I really wanted them to lose South Carolina. And I tell you why. Because Iowa does not support black people. And I'm going to tell you this. Right now, the board of resurgence, whatever the fuck the people is, are literally halting funding to all diversity programs at public schools and reviewing it to see if it's worth the money that they are giving.
That's once they do go first.
Once that's what they're doing first. They're doing that right now. Once they do the old, once they do the new programs, they will definitely start reviewing. And if they decide to take funding away from the new programs, they're definitely going to look into the funding that they're giving old programs. That includes your BSU, your whatever program your school got, whether it's And I'm specifically speaking very selfishly about Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, because some of the funding that we did get from the things that we did on campus, off campus, was from our student government. So if they decide that they want to take that money away, I'm going to have a problem with that for sure. So fuck Iowa. Fuck the University of Iowa. I hope y'all don't get no money from the sporting event. And that's really why I was rooting for y'all to lose. Y'all didn't do nothing for me. Anything that I got from the University of Iowa came from me.
On the strength.
And I still owe y'all money. They're talking about a lot of y'all owe. I saw a tweet that said a lot of y'all owe Iowa an apology. I said I owe them student loans and they're not getting either from me. I owe them student loans too. They're not getting that shit from me either. What you mean? I owe them an apology. I owe them money and they're not getting that from me.
It's all good.
Sally Mae could call me today and I'm going to tell her, girl, fuck you. Find that money in the basketball program. I know you got it.
They definitely do. You asking me to give you this money back
and I know you got it.
They definitely do. But we don't got
Caitlin do it. Clark make more money than me.
And with the NIL deals, bro. Man, what it is to be a college athlete. But
the girl 16, 15, 17. I don't know how old she is.
She's tall as hell for a woman. She's 6 foot.
Is she?
That's what they said. They said Caitlin Clark's 6 foot and her hands are massive.
She do got big ass hands.
Yeah, but they said, yeah, she's shorty tall.
She don't look tall, though.
Because she always bending down. And she's a shooter. So shooters, it's something weird about shooters. They never look as tall as they do because Steph Curry don't look tall.
And he's 6 feet, too?
No, he's like 6'3". That's what they say.
They be lying on them reports. Y'all sports people got to stop lying on that shit, for real.
On God.
But yeah, so congrats to LSU. I really wanted it to be South Carolina at the end, but
Shorty didn't know how to take jump shots. That's all.
And that's the thing she did. She waved off the bitch. I'm like, I would have took three dribbles in and just got me a little, you know.
I would have just started shooting.
Pop and pool. She made one. Yeah, she made one.
In the last couple of minutes, too. That's why I was like,
It was a very important shot, but if you would have been doing that from the beginning of the game, it would have been a different game. Yep. We're not a sports podcast, so we're not going to be talking about this too much longer, but we just wanted to talk about,
you know, more of the ramifications.
Yeah, be unapologetic, girl.
The fact that presidents were riding it, the first lady. Like, y'all said, this is...
You lost. You a loser. Stay home. See you next year.
And this is my problem, right?
When black people win... Y'all want to make it about participation for everybody. When white people win, you want it to be solidified.
You
want to
celebrate their greatness. Why can't we just celebrate LSU's greatness?
And let that be it.
Right. Like
they said, you know what? We're going to go to the Obama house. I'd rather go to the Obama house, too.
Honestly, I'm so tired of y'all making sports political. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Everybody. And I understand.
And stop looking at black athletes to be the voices of black.
Andrew Reese is 19. She shouldn't have this much weight on her shoulders.
Stop telling her what she shouldn't say. The girl is a child.
Let her have fun.
Let her have a moment. Because when I was 18, 17, I was far from politically correct.
Yes.
That's when I made the most of my mistakes.
Yes. That's why she on TikTok dancing, man.
She be dancing in the game. That's a child. After she block a shot, she be doing the TikTok dance. That's a kid.
She's doing what all of y'all are envious of, and she's having fun.
And that's
fun.
Why the people on Twitter telling her she needs to calm down.
She's sick. Having fun.
Because you didn't get to live that life, and you feel like your way is right.
That's jealousy.
Live your life now.
Yeah, literally. Have fun living who... Be who you are.
For your pride. And just like that... Let's move on to the next segment.
Ghetto intellectual. What's good?
Ghetto intellectual question for today.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Ghetto intellectual. I was thinking that we could do things I sent Deji on Twitter first.
You could do both.
We could do both.
We usually typically do.
Yeah. But the ghetto intellectual question today, and speaking of sports and all the things that we've been speaking to, do you think that sportsmanship was a man-made concept by the white man?
It has to be because
they started integrating sports and they started seeing that black people was whooping y'all asses. And just in our essence, we are very prideful. Y'all can beat us with them hoses out in them streets. But when you pick up this baseball and I boom this bitch out this thing, I'm finna run around this stadium and act like a real nigga.
Or when I start dunking all y'all because we could jump harder than y'all, so y'all have to make rules like inventing the 3-point line.
Yeah.
Nah, I'm not gonna say anything about it, but we know why they invented the 3-point line.
Right. That's really why Caitlin Clark got a lot of her points. Tell that bitch not to shoot she was jacking up some of the wildest shots I've seen.
She shot 5 for 17 in one game. Stop shooting threes. That's not you being a volume scorer.
That's literally you being the only scorer on the team.
Exactly.
They literally make every that's why I didn't like basketball when I was playing it, because our coach relied on the skill of one person. All of our plays had an option to go to one shooter,
right,
it's very easy to scout for that.
Yeah.
Super. It's very easy to scout for that.
It doesn't make you a good coach either.
Especially if you let this bitch throw up 30 shots a game. Yes, she's going to score 40 points a game, yeah, because you let her throw up 30 shots.
You would
mathematically, you would hope that at least 50% of them go in.
Even and even if they don't, 40%, that's still
30% about, yeah, of two, 30% of your, okay.
Yeah.
We all know math. But yeah, so,
as long as it's not 10% out of 40 shots.
Yeah, then you really got to sit, yeah, on the bench. It's exactly, okay. You got to stop shooting.
But 20%, that's 8 buckets.
Beyond the arc, you got to go inside. Yeah, like,
exactly.
I mean, like, even if you made 8 shots, that's
16.
16 points, that's a solid game.
That's why I said, even if she shoots 30%, add another 8 or add another 8 to that. No. Add another 4 to that. I'm sorry. You good.
20 points a game. That's decent. Anybody can win a game with 20 points.
Shoot 40%. Yeah. You give us an extra 20. That's
so
it.
Yeah, so to get into the answer is, yes, sportsmanship was created by white people.
It had to be. Like, what? Otherwise, they would, like, how else do you level the playing field? Because if I run through you as a grown man,
yeah,
I have every right to be like,
bitch.
Yeah. Fuck boy. Like,
you my son.
What's really good? What you going to do?
You're too little, too small.
Literally.
Too small.
Or if I dunk on you, yes, you should feel demoralized.
Yeah.
Demoralized. Sportsmanship is a thing that they made.
Yeah. And that's when they started giving out technical fouls. I bet you the first person to ever get a technical foul was a black man.
That's a good thing to Google.
Who was the first person to ever get a technical foul?
First player to ever get. Okay.
And at what point did they start charging people for technical fouls? I bet you the first person to get a fee from the NBA for getting a technical foul was also a black man. So, yeah, that was the intellectual question. I'm going to jump right into things I send Deji on Twitter just because, you know, we've been talking a lot with y'all. So for the sake of not talking too much longer, we're going to get right into this things I send Deji on Twitter. When I find the tweet.
So all I see here is that it looks like Karl Malone has had the most technical fouls.
No, that's not what we asked. But
actually, I'm sorry, Rasheed Wallace. But a technical foul, they said these sources are wrong because they're saying it was invented in 1999. I feel like it was sooner than that a technical foul was invented.
1999. Oh, like in the 80s?
The year. It had to be in the 80s or 90s. It had to be in the 80s because of the Bad Boys Pistons, but...
Mm.
I don't know. I'm going to have to look. I'm going to have to look at this.
Very controversial take. You know, we listen to a lot of music over here on the Nothing But a G Thing podcast. Deji is the R&B thug and I just DJ in real life. So very controversial take. Who would win in a versus, Summer Walker or SZA? This tweet says, not going to lie, Summer Walker beating SZA in a versus. Let's be for real.
So SZA has
20 songs,
2 hours,
20 songs versus 20 songs. Who's winning? You can do features. You can do your own songs. You can do EP things. Who's winning? Summer Walker or SZA? I'll tell you after you say who you say and I say who I say, I'll tell you what the people say.
So if I had to go based off a body of work, Control, she has the better album. SZA has the better album. Control is a classic. Grammy Award winning. Should have been.
Mm-hmm. So then SZA, like...
No, because SOS is a lot of single lines, but she did that because she marketed it on TikTok. So it was more a commercially successful album. But it's a lot of one-liners. It's not a good
when you're
album.
About lyrics.
Yeah, it's not a good album holistically.
Yeah.
It is a good album, but it's not a good album in holistically in storytelling and all that stuff. But
yeah,
she did that on Control. But SZA, we got Session 32. Summer Walker. Session 32. We got Riot. We got Clear. We got Settling. It's her. We got her.
We could do it like this. Popularity, notoriety, SZA. For lyrics and song quality,
Summer.
But the people voted, they said SZA.
Because
I personally, I said, I do it like I broke it down. As it pertains to popularity, SZA. As it pertains to lyrics and like full circle moments, Summer Walker. Me, who am I bumping more?
Full circle moments for me would be SZA, hands down.
Like moments, like songs.
Moments, like you said.
You just said there's like lyrics in the songs that you fuck with, but
yeah,
like
no,
as
no.
a full body of work.
Okay,
SZA.
Got you.
Yeah, full body of work, yes, but like SZA just dropped this album, which is why people are like, you know, giving it so much of its credit. And I believe that she, next year, come to Grammys, if SZA's not walking up to that stage multiple times.
You really think SOS is that good?
I think that its commercial success does not. I think a good album does not make a good actual solid album does not. We talked about this before with Taylor Swift and Beyonce. A good album does not make you an award winner, you know?
No, like, no, but I'm saying, good, is it a good album?
I only listened to it full, like, once.
So that's what I'm
but
saying.
I just like the one song that I like. And the one song that I like gives it enough power to, like, do whatever it needs to do.
Not because I'm trying to compare, but Jasmine Sullivan's Hotels.
Yeah. And she got the awards for that, though.
Complete body of work, wonderful storytelling.
From the beginning to the end, everything is cohesive, it flows. Yes. That is a good album, and she received her awards for that.
That's an album you keep, like, in tuck.
And right? I feel like it probably would have done better if the name wasn't called Hotels. Like,
but that's what brought people's attention.
Yeah, I mean, we was gonna listen to it regardless, to be honest. Yes. But, like, the
we
time.
We was because we messed with Jasmine, but other people.
The time it came out, it was really relatable, especially since the state of dating is just trash right now. So that was the things I sent Deji on Twitter. To be very honest with you, you know, Summer Walker is my girl. SZA is also my girl, but I just, you know, something about, like, body, deep, the list for me, insane.
I forgot about reciprocate.
Constant bullshit.
Reciprocate?
Yeah, Circus, like, still over it too. Like, even though y'all didn't give it the praise that it need, like, Switch On a Nigga, like, a lot of the songs just hit for me on that second album. Like, and the only song that I really listen to now on Snooze is Snooze on SOS. Snooze, I can play that shit like 15 times a day and never get sick of it.
Snooze, Love Language, Shirt, there's a lot.
Yeah, so, like, her singles that came out, like, I Heard Shirt, Good Days, I Hate You. Yeah. These are songs that, like, have been out so long that we forget that they were on the album. But yeah. Thank you for listening to another episode of Nothing But a G Thing podcast. It has been great to have you here with us. If you love us so much and you want to catch up with us even when we're not recording podcasts, you can follow us on our social medias. Our Instagram and Twitter for the podcast is Nothing spelled all the way out. NOTHING, capital B, capital A, capital G, capital T. My personal social medias, if you want to keep up with me, Instagram and Twitter, Suki G's, SUKIGEE and a Z, because I make everything that I try look twice as easy.
You can follow me at @damn_Deji. You spell that DEJI. Man, it's been fun. It really has. I hope y'all enjoyed the episode. Make sure y'all subscribe to everything. YouTube vlogs drop. IG, me and Yemi are both very, very much personalities. So follow us, interact, tell a friend to tell a friend. And in the meantime, y'all keep it lovely. 'Cause ain't nothing but a G thing, baby. Two loaded out G, so we're crazy. Death Row is the label that pays me. Unfadable, so please don't try to fade this. But back to the lecture at hand.